Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Dr. Kiki's Science Hour is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Dr. Kiki's Science Hour with Dr. Kiki Sanford and Leo Laporte, episode number 26, Finding the Humor in Science.
Dr. Kiki's Science Hour is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to Squarespace.com. Use the coupon code Kiki. And by the new voice-activated Sync, featuring hands-free calling, music search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. It's time for Dr. Kiki's Science Hour, everybody. And this is going to be a fun one today. Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you the wonderful, the talented Kirsten Sanford, Dr. Kiki.
Hi, everyone. Yes, this is Dr. Kiki's Science Hour, episode 26. Today, we're tickling the science funny bone. I have in studio today our wonderful guest, the science comedian, Brian Mallow.
Woohoo!
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Mallow. Mallow, hello.
Yeah, so now because there's a comedian in the house, suddenly
everybody's funny.
Everyone is funny.
Have to be funny. Yes.
We were going to do this show.
I apologize in advance.
We were going to do the show in French binary.
Yes.
1-0-0-0-1-1-1-0. But we decided not to.
I think that's a good idea. We might lose some listeners.
And now all across France, they're disappointed.
Dude, geeks across France.
For a moment, geeks in France were excited.
They were so excited.
How did you become a science comedian? I mean, that's a strange thing. Yeah.
You know, it was a pretty natural evolution. I was a comedian. If we take it back before, I was always a science enthusiast. So when I, instead of choosing to become any kind of scientist, instead took this sort of arts path and became a comedian, that always informed me. I was a science and science fiction geek, so that always informed my comedy. So my act was always a little geeky. And at a certain point, you know, there were always, I mean, the act that I would do in nightclubs was kind of geeky, but there were always some jokes that you just really couldn't do in the nightclub because, it, you know, one guy would laugh and the rest would stare at you. And I can give examples.
Go ahead.
Before I was a science comedian.
Test the audience.
You know, one of my favorites, like when I wrote this joke, I thought, oh my God, this is so, all my old friends, this would be our favorite joke. That I had a frightening experience the other day. I was sitting in a cafe and I noticed in the display case behind me, someone had put pasta and antipasta right next to each other.
Oh no.
Yeah. Are they out of their Vulcan minds? And...
Oh.
Is that instantrimshot.com?
Is it better with that or worse?
Well,
no, I got it. I liked it.
Yeah, but the thing, and so when I used to tell it, let's say I just go pasta and antipasta, and most people are waiting for the pun. One guy is
they don't know that
over,
that's the joke,
and they're like they don't see it, and that was weird because I thought first of all everyone, it's a basic thing. It's matter and antimatter plus Star Trek.
Right. Yeah.
They're
well, you added that you're out of your Vulcan mind to give it a punchline.
Yeah, but the other thing...
Still doesn't work.
Even before that, it should have been... No. I mean, amongst the right crowd.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing. I had some jokes and some references I would like to make that weren't going to be for everyone.
Right.
And when I did a private event for Apple or Microsoft, and there were a lot of engineers, I pulled out these jokes, and they would kill.
Yeah.
And I'm like... You know what I need to do is I need to just make sure I always get the right audience.
If you tell people you're a science comedian, then they're going to laugh at a matter or any matter joke.
So you do, so even if I do a show at a comedy club, like recently in Sunnyvale at Rooster Teeth Feathers, it was an evening. It was rational comedy for an irrational planet.
I love it. An evening
of science humor.
That's right.
So you get a crowd that comes out that knows what they're in for.
They've self-selected.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it really seems this is a niche market.
Yeah.
You've taken comedy as this huge field of various things that you can make fun of and honed in.
But like I said, it was very natural. I didn't have to go, it wasn't, I didn't think, what should I do? It wasn't a strategy.
Yeah.
It was...
How can I
it
be
was
special?
Like slapping my head going, why didn't I do this years ago? This is my favorite brand of comedy.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
So it was very natural. It was just like all my old friends are like, we always knew you were the science comedian. But it really takes calling you that.
Right.
You have
taking
to.
Taking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if there's how the history of science comedy is kind of evolved. Is now a
now
really,
wait a minute. Now let's get this
clear.
Is
now a special time?
Is that comedy about the history of science?
Yeah, there's that too.
Or a history right. of the science
of science comedy.
Comedy.
A historian of science comedy? Or is it, yeah, no. It's getting too complicated. No, what I'm thinking is throughout maybe the 20th century into the 21st century, yeah. How has comedy evolved? Is this brand of comedy, this science comedy, is it more acceptable now? Is there finally an audience, or was there always an audience?
Well, here's one interesting thing. When I checked to see if sciencecomedian.com was available, and it was, that was a pretty remarkable... Yeah. You think about all that. This was just a few years ago, and you think that there aren't very many nouns and simple... Like, that's a phrase that you're like, really? No one's ever bought that domain worldwide.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting telling thing.
How long ago was that, though?
Just a few. I think I bought it. We can check. But I think I bought it about 3 or 4 years ago. And at that point.
Something you know, so like that you'd
and
think.
You know, you could look at that as that's either a really good sign or a really bad sign.
Yeah. I mean, it like, could be like the veterinarian comedian. It might not. It might no mean there's no. Yeah.
I actually know of a veterinarian comedian in Colorado.
There you go.
He's a veterinarian who started doing comedy.
You see?
Do you hang out with lots of these?
Other noun comedians.
Noun comedians.
I'm a noun comedian.
I know an atheist comedian. And,
oh, really? What would an atheist comedian joke? What would that be? What kind of joke does he tell?
That's a.
He says, I don't know,
but I know who he doesn't blame when a joke doesn't work.
Yeah.
<That's right. laughs> there are all sorts of. I mean, people are looking for those niches, but it's nice when, like I said, it's just like I should have come to it even sooner. But the fact that that was available, I think that in the UK, more people are dabbling in this area. And some are big, like, you know, you could say Eddie Izzard and Ricky Gervais are two big comics.
Wonderful, smart comics.
Who are smart comics,
yeah.
And they have hit a lot of science topics. They don't limit themselves to that
right.
by any means,
right.
But they've done great stuff in there. And I think that there's other people, there are other science cafes have been going on longer there,
mm-hmm.
and science festivals have been going on longer
All
there.
All of that has been happening much,
and I
much
think
longer.
And the idea of being... Of having a casual evening and trying to bring humor into it, I think that thing has been going on longer there. And here, the timing is pretty interesting. I think I came at just the right time, came to my senses. Because
so there's been good work for a science comic.
Yeah, and I get it's working a lot better for me than just showing up. If I show up to do radio, it used to be I'm just a comic they've never heard of.
Right.
But
right.
now when I get there, even though they don't know me, they're like, that we're going to have a science comedian right, on, and they Google me, and they look into me, and they're intrigued. And sometimes I have to win them over because they're like, science comedian,
come on.
Really?
How
what's
can
funny?
Science be funny? What is funny about science, right. really?
There's a direct correlation to my career, though, too, because I was a standard kind of talk show host until I focused on computers. Mm. It really didn't take off, and then the computers have been very, very good to me because, you know, so it. I think it's not bad to specialize.
Were you doing something more general before that?
Oh, yeah. I was doing general talk for the first, 20 years of my career. So
he honed his skills.
I honed my skills. It was me versus Alex Bennett.
Here in the Bay Area?
Yeah, we were talking. Brian did this thing with Play TV, 10 years ago?
Yeah, 99 and 2000 is what I was doing.
Alex was a Bay Area disc jockey. Actually, he was on K-Rock first. Then he moved up north to Camel, and he was a disc jockey up here. And lost his job, so he got basically a video toaster, and he did what I'm doing now, but he did it like 15 years ago, before anybody had any bandwidth, and he was doing his own show out of his kitchen.
Right, before anyone had a way to get
and
it.
And he's in many ways the inspiration for what I'm doing today. It's just the times where he was a little ahead of the time. That's
they
all.
Created a network that you were at Tech TV at that time,
I was,
weren't you? Because we did a little something with Tech TV once or twice, covered us. And ultimately, we had a network with 6 2-hour shows. And I was the last one to come on board that completed the 12 hours of live programming a day. And
it was,
I did 300. I did it for a year and a half. I did 300 episodes.
It's exactly what we're doing.
Yep.
It's just that you were before a lot of people had the bandwidth to watch.
Exactly.
It was a little postage stamp video, you know?
And it actually looked pretty good.
Yeah. What did you cover on your show?
My show was But Seriously with Brian Mallow. ButSeriously.com is my original domain.
Yeah.
That I still have. And actually, I've got a web designer as we speak. We're doing a complete redesign of both But Seriously and Science
Comedian. I totally remember this now. Yes.
So, yeah, But Seriously with Brian Mallow.
That was actually quite well known, I think. Among the narrow.
Amongst a few people.
Yeah. Yes. The people who had enough bandwidth to watch.
Yeah.
You know?
We sent out a 56K stream as well. And it looked pretty impressive for 56K, which is a funny thing to even say today. But it really was decent. And my focus was science stuff. So I interviewed a lot of scientists, but I had a lot of authors, musicians, comedians, activists. To me, it was, But Seriously always suggested comedy and seriousness.
Yes.
So I felt like if I just made it interesting, I didn't have to always be funny as long as it was cool.
Yeah.
And
we have a atheist joke from the chat room.
I'm right there with you.
I don't believe it.
Atheism. It's a nonprofit organization.
I've played on that too.
Where's the rim shot when you need it?
Because the whole thing, the church is supposed to be nonprofit. So what is Jesus?
See, that's a twist on the same.
Oh dear.
You know what's concept. Funny with the jokes is I recently performed at Wonderfest, a Bay Area science festival, wonderfest.org, and for a TV, shot everything. And there were presentations. There were I also moderated a panel called Do Robots Make Better Astronauts?
That's a great
topic.
Yeah,
it was two sides of it, you know, manned or unmanned space program. So
I have the video. Should we show a little of that?
Yeah, I guess so. So I did a 15-minute performance, and it's on Fora.tv, but they took one excerpt and they threw it on YouTube.
Great.
And
it's gotten a lot of hits.
It's not completely representative of my entire act. It is a certain thing. And I thought that maybe we can watch it, and then we can talk about how people leave such pleasant comments.
YouTube is a cesspit. Ladies and gentlemen,
talk about that.
The comedy stylings of Brian
Fora
Mallow.
TV, the world is thinking.
I certainly hope so.
And then I realized, no, I'm actually way off. A virus is the ultimate David and Goliath. We must have a height advantage and a mass advantage of trillions on a virus, and yet it can take you down. It can kill you. It's like Luke Skywalker taking out the Death Star in a little X-Wing fighter. And, I mean, viruses are pretty amazing. I bet most of you have this level of understanding, at least, that they go into a cell. It's barely a life form on its own. But when it goes into a cell, it completely takes over the machinery and turns it to its own uses. It's a hostile takeover, you know? Your cells under new management. And, I mean, it really, truly, it's bizarre. It would be like going into a Coke factory and having them make Pepsi. Or weirder, going into a Nike factory and having them crank out Twinkies. And if you think about this kind of stuff too hard, here's the kind of jokes you come up with.
Uh-oh.
A virus walks into a bar.
There we go.
The bartender says, "We don't serve viruses in this bar." The virus replaces the bartender and says, "Now we do."
I love that joke.
An infectious disease walks into a bar. The bartender says, "We don't serve infectious diseases in this bar." The infectious disease says, "Well, you're not a very good host."
Now, is this a group of scientists in the audience?
That's okay. Groaning is acceptable.
Yeah.
They get it.
General audience.
The joke is sound. That's a callback. Two bacteria walk into a bar. The bartender says, "We don't serve bacteria in this bar." The bacteria say, "But we work here. We're staff."
That, I like that. That's my favorite. I like that one.
That one kind of.
Yeah, I like that one. So do they.
Room temperature superconductor walks into a bar.
Wait a minute. Anybody who begins a joke with a room temperature superconductor.
Yes.
Is it okay by you?
It's okay by me.
You know what? That's the great thing is these things, they have by doing a bunch of them in a row, I've discovered they have a certain momentum.
Yeah.
So that even the setup gets a laugh.
Yeah.
Because it's just absurd to be saying room temperature superconductor.
It made me laugh. Yeah. A room temperature
superconductor walks into a bar.
The bartender says we don't serve any superconductors in this bar. The room temperature superconductor leaves without putting up any resistance.
That's good.
Love it.
It took them a while to get it, though. They're kind of thinking.
An infrared photon walks into a bar and says, is it hot in here or is it just me?
Infrared.
Yes. I like to start to shoot for smaller and smaller portions of the audience. So, a neutrino walks into a bar. Who's with me? A neutrino walks into a bar. The bartender says, we don't serve neutrinos in this bar. The neutrino says, hey, I was just passing through.
We're going to interview a neutrino researcher in a couple of weeks. By the way. Yes.
There's got to be a Higgs boson joke in there.
Schrodinger's cat walks into a bar.
Schrodinger's cat.
I love it.
You know, that's like the Godwin's law of science. At some point, every discussion will devolve into Schrodinger's cat. Is it not the case? At some point, somebody will have to bring it up.
Yes.
All right. Schrodinger's cat walks into a bar. I'll have to give you the setup again.
And doesn't.
Oh, see, I ruined your joke. Let's go back.
Schrodinger's cat walks into a bar and doesn't.
That's very good.
So,
it's cerebral comedy, though, right? I mean, it's not.
Well, you know, here's the funny thing about it is that, and about the YouTube comments, some people are like, oh, this is great, smart comedy about smart stuff. Other people are like, these are the stupidest jokes, and they're judging me by this 3-minute clip.
Of course they
without
are.
Without having, see, this was the end of a much more conversational, I did a routine. And then I ended with these bar jokes. Some people are looking at this and they're going,
"That's it.
This is
what you do.
He sucks. They call you names that."
YouTube is far worse than anybody.
If you go to a video clip that I have of an interview with Michio Kaku where he's talking about his opinions on God, the comments in there.
Ooh, I bet they're good.
Oh man,
I bet
it got everything about me to about Michio to about the topic we're talking about, that just out there comments, and I just had one day I just had to stop looking because it hurt
TV. I mean, the funny thing is, these are, for those people that are saying that, I'm going like, well, you're kind of missing it. These are, yes, they're purposely corny, and they're purposely, yes, they are these bar jokes, but it's just a thing that it kind of evolved as well.
It's a genre.
I was doing a show. You know what happened? There's a small science museum in Washington, D.C. called the Marion Koshland Science Museum of the National Academy of Sciences. It's like a front. Mm-hmm.
It's a front for the National Academy.
I don't know what they're up to there, but it's not what it seems. And I did a show there, and then they had me back the next year, but they said they wanted a new show, and they said, could you do something to go along with our new exhibit on infectious disease?
There's nothing funnier than hemorrhagic fever. It's guaranteed laughs.
I was like, oh my God. But I said yes because I wanted the gig. So then I was like, can I do a show about infectious disease? Oh my God. Ooh. And then I realized Bill Cosby can do 20 minutes on having a cold.
Sure.
Yes.
So no problem. And then I realized, hey, I'm not Bill Cosby, turns out.
Oh, gee.
No?
But in the end, you know, my girlfriend and I, we write together, and we came up with a lot of stuff and padded it with other stuff. And at some point in thinking about viruses, I hit on this virus walks into a bar, and there were about three of them. The staphylococcus, the staph, and then the infectious disease one.
Yep.
And then I just started finding when I did them at regular shows after that, that they were so sick. The crowd loved them, and I realized I need to do more of them.
Good.
Yeah.
And that clip cuts off the last couple, and arguably the best one, which is some helium gas drifts into a bar. Mm-hmm. The bartender says, we don't serve noble gases in this bar. The helium doesn't react. So I was like, for me, it's like that's
chemistry jokes, ladies and gentlemen.
Especially when some of the comments are in there going, and that last one, he decided to end on that. That was the stupidest one. Well, what do you want to say to these people? You go, I didn't decide to end it. The clip ends there.
The chat room loved it. The chat room loved it. Thank you, chat room.
They're corny, but if you want to see the other stuff, look in the sidebar, and there are 10 other videos of me.
Yeah, and I think I have a video probably in my backpack that I have yet from an out. I put a video of you up from our Copus thing. I have a second half to that. I don't know if I
you
put
do?
Up. I think I had two parts. Oh. Did I put up both parts?
I don't remember.
I might have a second part that I have yet to upload that has a bunch of those jokes on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've, I... I think these jokes are great because people can remember them too. And so it's something that they're short. If you are into the topics, you can really get them and you go, oh, that's really funny. And then you're on to the next one. And like you said, they build on each other and it's just fun comedy.
Yeah. It's just funny that, like I said, it is not very representative of my entire act. Yeah. And yet it's the thing that just got 240,000 views. So all these people, that's me to them.
Yes.
And that's just, I guess that's the way it works.
We're going to ask
you're a bar joke, dude.
We're going to ask the question, do
at
scientists...
least it's not dead babies.
Oh, God. Do scientists have a sense of humor? We will ask that question in a moment, but first a word from Squarespace.com, a great website where you can build your own site, do amazing... So, Kiki, have you used this? It's amazing.
I have. I signed up for a free trial using Squarespace. It's amazing. It's easy to set up a website for yourself. I have lots of friends who have used it, and I recommended it to my a few people.
When you set up your trial, it's 14 days, no credit card needed. But then, by the way, very easy to import all of your data in.
Yes.
Here's how simple it is to sign up.
They have
importers for all of the existing sites, so you can design, you can build your site, you can do the whole thing here. Import your data from Blogger, from WordPad, from TypePad, right into it. Look at this. This is the blog importer. They keep getting better and better and better. So you don't lose a thing. And by the way, import and export. So if you decide, I don't want to stick around, no problem. Get it right back out to WordPress, Blogger, Movable Type, TypePad. It was seamless, and it worked. It did a really great job. But now, when you get on Squarespace, all the things you get, incredible hosting, incredible software. Their virtual hosting means you never run out of bandwidth. You don't have to worry about the twit effect. It's cloud hosting. The design tools, the templates, start with beautiful templates, but then you can completely control them. So it always looks the way you want. Perfect for a blog, yes, but don't think it's just blogs. You can also use it for photo sites. Squarespace.com. If you decide you like it, use the coupon code Kiki, K-I-K-I. You get 10% off. And that's a good deal, too. Squarespace.com. We thank them so much for their support of Dr. Kiki Science here. I think that's the first time they've been on the show. Is that right?
This is the first time that Squarespace has been on the show, and I thank them for supporting us. And don't forget to use the promo code Kiki.
Yes.
When you sign up.
K-I-K-I.
Makes it easy. What show did I hear about this on? Dr. Kiki Science Hour. What should I say? Kiki.
Yes. You get paid either way, but it's what they keep track.
I know.
Thank you, Squarespace.
Thank you.
So do scientists have a sense of humor, or do they... They seem they must, otherwise you couldn't be the science comedian.
Right. Now, I don't... I love to perform for scientists, but that's only part of what I do. I perform for general audiences.
Who laughs harder?
Oh.
Are scientists like dour people in white coats?
No, not at all. You know, in my experience, you've probably found this too. Kiki, you've spoken to a lot of scientists. People have this impression of scientists, but most of them... You know, first of all, scientists often are very childlike, you know, because they have made a career. They have devoted their lives to pursuing curiosity.
To breaking things?
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
They're fun
to taking
people.
Things
they're,
apart, yeah. to trying to put them back together again. I find that there is a parallel between artists and scientists. Mm-hmm. There has to be so much creativity to be able to design experiments, to be able to come up with questions, that childlike curiosity you're saying, to ask questions all the time of everything.
Yeah. But that wouldn't apply to everyone. But
yeah, because sometimes I think smart people are not, they don't like to laugh. They know too much.
I don't know.
No, is that not true?
No, I don't think
so. I am too smart to find the world funny.
You know, the other side of that one is a lot of times people, like, in complimenting comedians, they always go, God, you have to be so smart to be a comedian. And you go, well, thank you. And then you think, I know a lot of comedians, and they're not all that smart. You know, some of them are. But
I often thought comics are smarter than the average person because they have to think quickly and... They see the world in a different way. Yeah. But I guess you're right.
They have different skills, maybe.
That's a way to describe it. They're differently able.
Something like, I always thought that sense of humor is an interesting phrase, that I have a sense for when there's humorous potential about.
Right.
It surprises me sometimes. Yeah. We're having a conversation, and sometimes there's this really obvious thing, and I'm going to say it. And to me, it's just hanging in the air waiting to be said. But apparently nobody else was going to say it. So what does that mean?
Funny.
That's just the way my mind works. I see some humor somewhere.
You make links somewhere between and I don't know. Do you find yourself constantly looking for that thing that's funny? Or
sometimes.
Okay.
But sometimes it's a little of both, because since you've devoted your life to this and it's a career, yeah, sometimes you're looking for humor. But other times, and that's sometimes the best, is when you're relaxed and you're not trying and stuff flows out of you.
Right.
Like an artist.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Do you ever have friends or people that you hang out with who just expect you to be on?
Oh, yeah.
And humor me with the science funniness.
Oh, I hate it when people ask me.
It's not friends as much as strangers and people you meet. And you know,
you're funny. Funny guy, tell a joke.
You meet someone on an airplane and you could be laughing with them. You could be making them laugh for half an hour. Then they ask you what you do for a living, and you say comedian, and they go, "Well, tell me a joke." We've been laughing what the past half hour? I just closed with that.
Yeah, you were on the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson.
Yeah,
How was that for a general audience? I mean, that's for pretty much mass consumption.
Oh
how
yeah,
did that
and
go?
You know, that was right before I was crystallizing the idea of being a science comedian. So I wasn't on there as the science comedian.
Right.
I just went on there but you know, a couple of the jokes are kind of science geeky, because that was always the case with me anyway. But it was fun. And I actually, the great part of it was I didn't get that by going through the talent people. I actually did a few shows with Craig Ferguson and he liked me.
Yeah.
That was a great way
He's
to get
a smart
on the show.
Guy.
Yeah.
He's a really neat guy.
And he has done that. That's really rare too. He's a comedian, and he has used a lot of people that have been support acts for him. So that's really cool. That's not true of everyone that has a show where he's been really supportive to these young guys that were opening for him.
We have from our chat room some jokes.
Great.
Bring them.
They're probably your jokes. I'm going to guess they've stolen them from Brian Mallow, the science comic, but I could be wrong. Let's see. What did the nuclear physicist have for lunch?
Wait.
What did the nuclear physicist have for lunch?
Where did you find this one?
It's actually in the friend feed room. It's from Johnny Worthington.
It's not related to fission, is it?
It is. Fission chips.
Fission chips. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
That is
one thing. You know, very often people love to tell. You get off stage after performing for an hour, and people walk up and go, "You want to hear a joke?"
Yeah.
You go, really?
Not
honestly,
really.
No. But go ahead. And then very often, that's one of the ways my mind. If someone's telling me a joke, I can't help but sort of be, you know, trying to back.
You're analyzing it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that, like that, I wanted to see. It's like
there's something there. There's something there.
Fission chips. Okay.
Fission chips. What was the biologist wearing on his first day with a hot chick? Designer jeans.
I like that.
Some of these jokes have that kick, that character where people don't laugh. They go,
Those I haven't heard either of those.
Good.
But in the comments, every place that those walk into a bar jokes, every single place that those have been posted, Reddit, Boing Boing, YouTube, for everywhere they are, there are two jokes that people always post that they're classics, and they're always like, and people are like, "Oh, that's hysterical," but to me, they're the old ones.
It's like chicken crossing the road, kind of.
Two hydrogen atoms are walking down the street. One says, "I lost an electron." The other says, "Are you sure?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm positive."
I'm positive.
And in fact, that was in our chat room.
Okay.
They told that joke.
That one, and the other one is a neutron walks into a bar.
That one also.
How much for a beer for you?
No charge.
And those two.
Aren't you embarrassed, Johnny Worthington? Aren't you embarrassed?
No offense, but those are classic ones.
Old.
And yeah, so like I won't use those. I'm on stage. I'm only going to use ones I made up, or possibly ones that your viewers made up.
Right. You can steal the ones from our viewers. That's
someone here is asking, "What do you call a bacteria?" Oh, that doesn't work though.
What is it?
I don't think that makes sense. What do you call a bacteria at a party? A fungi.
No, there's a bar.
Bacteria
walks into
a mushroom.
A mushroom walks into a bar. We don't serve your type, but I'm a fun guy.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what it is. Yeah. Mushroom. I'm like, that doesn't work. Bacteria? No.
yes, comedy writing lessons here on Dr. Kiki Science Hour.
Yes, do you have any blonde scientist jokes?
Or redhead?
You know, I don't. I
smart man.
A joke about what you'd probably have.
By the way, Johnny Worthington.
Santa, a blonde nuclear physicist, and somebody else, and which one of these things doesn't exist? And you'd probably a blonde
nuclear physicist. Nuclear You've physicist. Heard a few of these.
Yeah, I've heard a few of these.
Have
jokes.
You seen this? There's this image that it maybe has been around a while, but it's a Venn diagram, which is the Venn diagram, right? And it has these three categories of, like, instills fears in villagers, has resurrected from the dead, and one other and has something about converting blind followers.
Yeah.
And so in between, like, each pair of them, it's like Frankenstein, Dracula, and zombies. Mm-hmm. But in the middle with all of them is Jesus.
Oh.
Sorry if I've lost anyone on that one, but I thought it was pretty funny. I just saw it.
It's a visual.
It's a visual. It's a Venn diagram joke.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Like my pasta antipasta joke, the problem with it is that you have to know a little bit about physics and a little bit about Italian food.
So it's a Venn diagram.
Yeah. And that's why I think that.
Physics. Italian food. Where they intersect. But Brian Mallow's jokes.
But see, that's the funny thing. Even for someone to ask me if I have any blonde jokes, like, that's not like the bar jokes aren't totally representative of what I do. I want to do more stories and stuff. The other clip.
I have some stories. Comedy. Should we play the anecdotal stuff? Do scientists have a sense of humor?
We could even just sort of talk about that, but we could.
Well, let's play a little bit of it. People can watch and then.
Do scientists have a sense of humor?
Do scientists have a sense of humor? This is another one of those Fora TV bits.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I perform for general audiences and specialized groups, and I perform for scientists, and very often people ask me, do scientists have a sense of humor? Which, ridiculous question. They do, but if I had to say something about some scientist's sense of humor, sometimes it's very literal, and so you have to be scientifically accurate, and you also have to be literal. Like, here's an example. I was performing once, and I was talking about the heat in Arizona, and I said something about it being 110 degrees in Tucson, 125 at Lake Havasu. And I said, that just sounds like science fiction. You're talking about the surface of Venus. And from the back of the room, someone went, no.
I love that.
True story.
I know.
Venus is much hotter than that.
I'm sorry.
And the truth is, I knew that. I was using a comedic device that we call exaggeration.
Uh-huh, I've heard of that.
And I should be able to do that. But that's the thing. And maybe I deserve that because I've always had that kind of literal sort of mind also. But I love it. I love performing for science enthusiasts and for science. I did a conference a year ago, and I was getting ready to tell something about... I was going to tell this story about Pluto being demoted. Yeah. It's kind of a sad story. Anyone sad? Yeah. Is anyone all for it? Is anyone, like, right on? Really? Yeah. What do you have against Pluto? Yeah. Cold, distant. I don't want to be in a plutonic relationship. Well, I mean, the thing I was going to say is that Pluto was, like, demoted, and then they were going to call it, a dwarf planet, which isn't even cool. They prefer to be called little planets. So it's not even politically correct. So I had a room full of scientists of all disciplines, and I knew there was at least one astronomer in the room. So before I told this joke, I was like, oh, and the astronomer in the room is actually an astronomer from the Vatican. His name's Brother Guy Consolmagno, and he's an astronomer, and he's the curator of the Vatican meteorite collection. How would you like that on your business card?
It's bizarre.
Isn't that amazing? Did you know the Vatican had a meteorite collection? He's the curator. And he's a great guy, no pun intended. Really, real funny. And
what would be the
on the way to the
I'm sorry,
joke,
what's the pun there?
Oh, his name is Guy.
Oh, great guy.
When I said, Brother Guy, what did you think of Pluto being demoted? And he said, I was on the committee that decided.
Ooh. Wow.
And then the whole room laughed and then hissed him. And
we have villains.
That was
science.
One of the most beautiful moments I've ever had on stage. And it's the kind of thing that it's not likely to happen at a comedy club, that one of the dozen people on this international commission that decides the fate of Pluto is, drunk in the audience, blurting stuff out. That's not going to happen. But at this conference of scientists, he wasn't drunk, I don't think. But and to be fair, he actually, when I talked to him later, he said, I didn't say which way I voted. He just went for the laugh. He just, yeah. So he went for the laugh as well.
He was comedic. So scientists do have a sense of humor.
He was very funny.
Isn't that great?
A lot of them are. And I found that in just interviewing people that they're cool, especially if you're interested in their subject and they know you are, then they're...
People relax.
Look, there's a whole show, Big Bang Theory. It's about science comedy now, right? I mean, it's very funny. It's a great show.
Very popular, too.
I don't know if we can come up on this, but today I took a picture of a license plate. It says Plutoid.
Oh, nice.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's too many letters. How did he get that license? Yeah, seven letters. I guess you can have seven.
Seven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Plutoid.
I just saw it today.
Wow. It's a science license plate.
Yeah.
I like it.
My favorite license plate. One time I saw one, it said Love HZ.
Love
Hurts.
Love Hurts.
So it's a science one. It's science, a music one.
A sound joke.
It's philosophy.
Hurts. Got it.
Love Hurts.
Love Hurts.
So, hey, thanks for all the at science comedian at Twitter.
Oh, yeah. There's
Twitter. They're streaming in.
Oh, yeah.
I've got so many new Twitter.
Do you tell jokes on your Twitter account?
What are you doing? You know, not that often because, I'm not mostly a one-liner guy.
You can't do it in 140 characters.
Yeah, so I'll point you towards things, and but sometimes I do. Like, I remember a while back, I wrote a new little one-liner, which is take only pictures, leave only footprints.
Yeah?
Yeah, I tried that at the Louvre, and they got pissed.
Don't leave any footprints.
I could fit that into 140 characters.
That's good. It's hard writing Twitter comedy, actually. Yeah, that's a difficult
But I found people pulling out some of my jokes and condensing them and giving a 140-character version.
I like it. What would have been maybe your best audience? So it's in your bio from your website, thesciencecomedian.com. It says that you've performed at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, JPL, American Chemical Society, Scholastic Library Publishing, the Association of Science Writers. You've been everywhere. You've pretty much performed wherever there's a scientific, technical audience to
be
had.
That's the goal anyway, yeah.
Yeah. What would you say would be the strangest audience or even your best audience or the...
You know, I don't know. I don't have a simple answer to that because I've done groups of scientists and one of the best was where that brother guy incident happened. It was a very interesting conference, that Science Foo Camp.
Sci-Fu,
sponsored by Nature and O'Reilly Media and held at the Googleplex. And I went in 2008. And that, everyone, it's an unconference and everyone is expected to participate and to contribute. And so I did a presentation and I had a nice-sized crowd, all scientists, or if not, at least... journalists, people in like us, if well, you're a scientist, but if not a scientist, at least a science journalist or blogger or something, a communicator. And it was that was so good because that was one of the just smartest across the board audiences, and you could say anything, and there was no reference they weren't going to get. But on the other hand, I love the shows that I've done at the Punchline in San Francisco or at Rooster Teeth Feathers, these at a comedy club. And that's a little different because that's a nightclub environment, more my old digs, my old haunts. And they've come and they, in a way, it could be a little rowdier. I feel like I can be a little looser. There might be a few jokes I would tell there that I wouldn't tell at a corporate event.
Right. More risque.
Yeah. So I loved, so it's really hard for me to say. That Sci-Fu thing was one of my favorite. And that moment with Brother Guy, just
that's
because, you know, what'd you think? And he's like, he was on the committee that decided.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of this, the comedy style that I've seen is fairly family friendly, too. Is there anywhere you don't go or won't go with your science comedy?
You're saying it's mostly family.
Is there blue science comedy?
There's a little bit. You know, I have a couple things that get into something slightly sexual or like a joke that I might not tell everywhere, but this one could be tweeted. Could this be tweeted? How many characters is this? I always thought it would be fascinating to see my... No, this is probably too long, but I always thought it would be fascinating to see my own sperm under a microscope But now that I told them, none of my scientist friends will let me borrow their microscopes.
That's good.
That's true, a good story. True story. True story.
Well, even better. That's hysterical. I think that's a great joke. Yeah.
So that's, you know, I wouldn't, I might not do that at every event.
Right.
But I also think that's clean.
It's pretty clean. It's not.
But it's a masturbation joke.
Oh, right. I didn't know that.
Well,
I'm sorry, you can't tell.
Well, that's why they won't
loan. It's implied. Implied masturbation?
Implied masturbation, I think you're all right.
Right.
That's okay.
Yeah. It's smart, it's fun. Is there just for you personally, there's a clean limit or is there just...
No, you know what? I've never been a particularly raunchy comedian.
Right.
And I'm not prude, and nothing offends me, so it's not that. It's just that, you know, and so, there are some dirty comics that I love. I mean, and I don't know, like, I'd hesitate to call George Carlin a dirty comic.
No.
But he certainly didn't pull any punches.
Right.
And same with Richard Pryor. They had their dirty stuff, but you can't write them off and say dirty comic, because they were brilliant.
Yes.
But nothing offends. Bill Hicks... Mm-hmm. Could be very graphic, but absolutely brilliant, I think. And so there's a lot of stuff I like. But then I really, Brian Regan is another comedian who no one is cleaner, squeaky clean, but no one's funnier either. He's pretty amazing. So really it's just a matter of, you know, there are some comics that it's dirty for dirty's sake.
Right.
And it's just trying to shock value. And that's just not interesting.
No.
Yeah.
And no, you do smart stuff.
The shock value with science
except for those
probably
virus
has to
jokes.
Do with
that.
But those are purposely corny.
I know.
I'm just thinking, you know, shock value with science, it all has to do with electricity.
Right, she had a joke. I'm sorry. I stepped on your joke.
I can't help, I do like puns. I like, you know what? I'm a lover of language. I like wordplay. I like puns. I found you were, early, as a comedian, you learn early on, you can't do too many puns on stage.
Yeah.
You can't do too many.
You can't. Because they play too corny.
Right.
They're great. They're great off stage. They're great in writing. Sometimes
it's like a sixth grader would tell.
Right.
Yeah.
I've always had a couple puns that I could pull off on stage, and then this thing, the bar jokes work because there's an admission that they're corny.
Yes.
It's clearly. I even tell
it's
them
all
groaning is
cheap.
The appropriate response. Yeah. Yes. We're being stupid here. It's okay.
And it's okay to be stupid. Even scientists can be stupid sometimes.
And our smart chat room has found the Venn diagram. There you go. Just so in case you want to look at it and see.
Right.
Resurrected from the dead, local townspeople fear and revere him, converted as many mindless followers as possible.
If you were to take a zombie Frankenstein and Dracula and put them together.
That's what you get.
That's what
somebody said that to me recently.
Interesting.
Hey, let's take a break. Come back with more. We're talking to the science comedian, Brian Mallow. If I say it funny, is it funnier?
I think so. That could be my new theme
Ryan
song.
Brian Mallow.
I got to make an MP3 of that.
Yes. He's funny. That's the Jerry Lewis
Leo's
school of
off
comedy.
The deep end.
Yeah.
People have tried to get me to be really corny, like, hey, you should wear lab coat and be goofy. And I don't think so.
Too much. Too far.
I don't like the lab coat.
Don't play to the stereotype.
Whenever you say science or technology, there's always somebody who says, okay, you're going to wear a lab coat, right?
And if you'll notice, Bill Nye is not wearing a lab coat anymore.
He's got a bow tie, though.
He still has his bow tie, but now he's like wearing stuff from REI. He's wearing, like,
I didn't notice that, really.
Stuff. I don't know.
That's interesting.
In a new show.
We're going to take a break for the Fullard folks and Sink My Ride.
Yeah, and then I want to find out what you're doing for Time Magazine.
Yes.
What is he up to for Time Magazine? Find out. You know, somebody said, you know, this is a podcast. You really shouldn't tease because all that does is means people fast forward through the commercial. It's not like they have to wait to find out what he's doing for Time. They're just going to skip right through this part. But please don't. Please. I invite you to take a look at the new Ford Sync. What a fabulous technology this is. It's out there in my new Ford right there. I fell in love with a Ford Sync. You can do the whole idea is you keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road, and yet you have complete control of everything in the car. I just showed earlier on Maxwell's house, you press the button on the wheel and you say climate, and then you say temperature. You say set the temperature 74 degrees and it sets the temperature. You can say play the Beatles. It plays the Beatles. It works with the USB or do both. It works with any USB device. So I use my iPhone. Actually, I use Bluetooth on my iPhone. But I also have an iPod cable in there because it's got a USB jack and I can plug in my iPods or my iPhones. It works with a Droid. Works with anything with a USB cable. If it has MP3s on it. The Zoom 2, the sync is smart. It says, I know what this is. It'll index the songs in there, and then you can call for them by name, by artist. You can say play similar, play next track, play previous track. You can also say things like it's got Sirius Travel Link built in. Free for the first 3 years, by the way. I think it's like $7 a month after that. So you can say things like weather forecast, you know, five-day forecast or sports scores. You can search for businesses via 411. Personalized news, traffic reports. It even knows your routes, and it'll give you traffic reports and reroute you. Complete turn-by-turn directions. You've got a GPS in there. You could say, play Dr. Kiki's Science Hour. It'll play Dr. Kiki's Science. It's amazing. I want you to give it a try. Go to your favorite Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury dealer and say, I want to try the – I don't want to test drive the car. Just please, can I look at the sync? They'll be glad to have you. Or go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com to learn more. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. We're going to be down at CES. I think we're bringing my Mustang and another Ford car down there. So if you're in Vegas for CES, come by. I'll give you a personalized demo of a Ford Sync. I think you're going to like it. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. So what are you doing for Time Magazine?
Well, I am making...
money.
Mildly.
Oh, okay.
I'm making money. I'm betting against them. No, I'm making science videos that are mildly humorous. And I've gotten into the habit of saying that because right from the beginning, some of them would be, they'd appear, someone would embed it somewhere and someone, it would say science comedian Brian Mallow, and they'd watch and they go, well, that wasn't very funny. I thought he's a comedian. Well,
I do that too. It's called the defensive. You know, you say, I'm not funny. I'm mildly humorous.
Yeah. So the thing is, it's like, this is not my stand-up.
Right.
But so it's a combination of real science reporting.
Oh, neat.
And you know, trying to inject some humor. And if not humor, at least bringing some personality and some passion to it, going, this is cool.
Yeah. I saw your piece on Copernicus?
Galileo.
Galileo. Yeah.
The International Year of Astronomy.
Exactly. And it was... so well done. It was really fun. And I sat there going, I want to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that looks so
well,
much fun.
That's a good
gig. It was really well done.
Yeah, it's
really,
a really
nice
good
job.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, so I'm writing them and appearing in them. And I've worked with a couple really good producers.
That's great.
That are really good. Good camera guys.
It always helps to work with a good team.
Yeah,
because, but
so
the writing, what you write is fabulous. You put together a good piece.
Yeah. So great. if you go to time.com or time.com/video. Oh, yeah. That's the Galileo one.
Galileo.
We're all on a first name basis with him, like Elvis and Oprah. And centuries after his death, his name is attached to a galaxy of products.
Yeah, this is well done.
So what's a guy got to do to leave such an imprint on a culture? Well, he's been called the father of modern physics, even the father of modern science, by the likes of Albert Einstein and Stephen Hawking, no less. And the United Nations has declared 2009 the International Year of Astronomy, in part to honor the 400th anniversary of Galileo's first use of the telescope as an astronomical instrument. Before that, like most new technologies, it was probably used mostly for porn.
Thank you, Time Magazine.
Don't quote me on that. I'm just saying most new technology is first used
You're
as porn.
You're exactly right.
That's right.
Oh, those are great. So how many of those have you done?
There's about seven
they
or
look
so.
Great.
If you
this
go to time.com and search on Brian Mallow, they'll come up.
Yeah.
And there are a couple that are in post-production right now. There are three that are coming soon. And I'm going to be doing some more stuff. And hopefully I'm going to find a way to do some stuff that I can do on my own. But
yeah.
I'm not as good a producer or editor as these guys.
You can tell it's very pro.
Having a pro team makes a huge difference in how it looks in the end.
Yeah.
What the end product comes out to be.
Oh, you do a thing on the helium shortage. That's good.
Oh, great.
Yes. And you know, that actually started with, I did a thing for O'Reilly Media. They have this thing called Ignite. Do you know
the Ignite
presentations?
Yeah, Ignite is a neat thing.
And when I was at NIST,
You worked at NIST?
No. I did perform there.
Our time is in your hands.
Yes. I did go perform there, and they gave Tara and I a little tour, and I overheard something about the helium short. I had never heard about this fact that ultimately we are going to run out of helium. And it was a fascinating subject, and I looked into it. So when I did my Ignite presentation, I did it on basically about hydrogen and helium. Nice. And about the helium shortage. And then it's really different what I did for time, because that's more of a reporting thing. But I got to fly in a Zeppelin it's called Eureka Airship Ventures. They have right. their they, if you, yep, you, the airships. You may have seen it in yeah. Mountain View at NASA Ames.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They lease space at NASA Ames, and they have a hangar there. And
they're the ones you see them flying over the city yep. or in the spring and summer and into yep. the fall. I've seen them up and about. And
yep. And it's not yeah. a blimp. It's a Zeppelin. It's a and Zeppelin. There's a slight difference.
What's the difference?
The difference is a blimp has no structure, no metallic structure. If you deflate a blimp,
it's just falls a balloon. To the ground.
But a Zeppelin has some structure to it. And the advantage of it, the major advantage is the engines don't have to be mounted on the gondola. They're actually farther away. So
it's quieter.
So it's much quieter. And it was just beautiful. When it takes off, it's not like anything else you've ever taken off in. You're like, we're just drifting up into the sky. The,
people don't know. They go up fabulous. In the Goodyear blimp. They don't realize it's going to be noisy because there's...
Yeah. I mean, do you know that right is it? Right I've never been in a blimp.
It's very noisy.
Okay, well, this isn't because they actually have two engines. I think that might only have one engine in the back.
Yeah.
But this has two, and they're far away from the gondola. So it's really quiet.
We would have Zeppelins if it weren't for that darn Hindenburg thing. Really, yeah, really put a yeah. damper in the Zeppelin industry.
I've said that
explosive.
I can't think of any other single event that
completely derailed an industry.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Oh, bad PR
well,
for hydrogen.
3 Mile Island and Chernobyl didn't do a lot for nuclear plants.
That's true.
Yeah, but I did hear with the hydrogen and the Hindenburg, it wasn't actually the hydrogen's fault that there was some right. something else.
That sounds like a science
it's
joke.
It's not hydrogen's fault. Hey, man.
There's a science joke in there somewhere.
Hey, man.
Hey, man. It's not my fault, man.
Don't blame hydrogen. No. Sounds like a bumper sticker.
Don't blame hydrogen for Hindenburg.
But let's face it, not a good material to make an inflatable flying balloon out of.
Possibly, yes.
I mean, because whatever the other thing was,
I think
was,
it was something to do
spark.
With the glue on yeah. that was actually holding the cloth
but,
of the...
If it had been filled with helium, what would have happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
It wouldn't have been, the humanity.
Oh, no. It would just have been, we're all talking like this.
I don't know. I think the helium balloon exploded. I don't know what happened. And there's something that the most...
By the way, is the helium shortage over, or can we... do we have to...
No,
it's not over, and it's getting worse, right?
The problem is that helium is so light that whatever helium was here originally just drifted away. And the hydrogen would have. Hydrogen's lighter, but hydrogen bonds with everything. Right. I say it's almost kind of slutty. It's like it'll hook up with anything.
Yeah.
Slutty hydrogen.
That kind of anchors
it. I told
it
you
here.
It was hydrogen's fault.
You know, hydrogen gets around. And so it's here because it's in heavier molecules. But helium doesn't bond with anything. So, helium drifts away. So there's no primordial helium here.
Right.
And...
Wow.
The only place we get our helium, it's very strange. It's a byproduct of the natural gas industry.
Yeah.
It's only because it's a byproduct of the radioactive decay of uranium and thorium.
Yes.
So uranium and thorium decay, they give off beta particles, which are helium nuclei. And most of those would go away, but the ones that they get trapped in the same natural deposits that trap natural gas. So when they started, when the natural gas industry started taking off, they were finding there was something in there that wasn't flammable.
Because I'm talking like this.
and so much of it was wasted until they realized there might be
it
a
floats.
Market for it. There might be something they could do with it.
Isn't that funny?
Balloons for the children.
But we're going through it. And the U.S. has dominated the helium market since after World War I. We have... Most of the world's helium is located near Amarillo, Texas, where we have stockpiled it since World War I.
Wow!
But we're tapping it.
The helium reserves. We're digging into our national.
We
helium.
Just have to, get the uranium to decay faster.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Right.
Yeah. So that decays so slowly that it's really not renewable.
Hmm. Yeah.
But now the strange part of it is you look up and there is a helium factory 24/7. You know,
right.
Well, not at night, but
Well, it's still there.
Yeah. Another dumb joke.
So Mop and Glow, the official floor wax of Three Mile Island. I'm just throwing them out when I see them.
Yeah. Science jokes.
That science jokes.
Everyone.
We do have one Vidly. Did we...
How do I search for DKSH?
Look for DKSH.
On the Twitter?
On the Twitter.
And I will find it.
We can see what Sword Edge had to joke about.
Oh, yes.
Let's see. I was hoping we'd get more, you know? We
got one.
So
we're going to keep pushing it. I'm going
to
keep pushing it.
.ly, and you can record a joke for us, or, well, in this case, for this show, but you could do something else, a question, a comment, a suggestion. And, you know, I guess, when do you post, like, who's going to be on so people can prepare for it?
Well, I tell you a week in advance.
And so you'll find out at the end of the show today.
Yes, at the end of the show today, you'll find out who's going to be on. This is my tease for the end of the show.
Cool.
For the tease for next week's show.
All right, you ready for Sword Edge?
Yes.
Here is Sword Edge's joke of the week.
This is David from Durham.
He's also a ventriloquist.
Jokes, and, okay. Today, while picking up a chiller for the lab, I came up with one. A chiller walks into a bar and the barkeep says, "We don't serve your kind in here." So the chiller says, "You're cold, man."
The chiller?
Okay. That's where's instantcrickets.com? That's what I...
we're like, what?
Yeah, there was one... Somebody posted a video post back to that walks into a bar video. And it's kind of funny. And she misinterpreted one joke so dramatically. The neutrino joke, she didn't catch the word neutrino. She said, I think said there's this one, and I forget what word she says, but it's not neutrino. And then she goes, the idea with a neutrino is that it can
pass
through. I'm just passing through, because
it can
pass
through
so many miles of lead and not interact with anything.
They're weakly.
She thought it was a diarrhea joke.
Oh.
I'm just passing through.
Oh, no,
so what do you do with someone who's like, I love this guy, he's so funny, I think that's a diarrhea joke? You're wrong, but thanks for loving me.
No, I don't think subatomic particles have bowel problems. There's the instant crickets, by the way.
Yeah. Is that a site too? Like,
yeah.
Instant rimshot,
instant crickets, and sadtrombone.com. Always good for anybody in the comedic business.
Yeah. Always good when you're in the lurch, when you're in need for sound effects.
You
never
know.
Honey,
that's
good.
Well, I want to thank
all these Kiki around.
All these Twitter people. I'm at Science Comedian, and I'm on Facebook, Brian Mallow. I need to put up a fan page. Haven't done that. I'm just Brian Mallow, my personal page. And the website, sciencecomedian.com. Really, you need to, not enough people make it to the blog, and everything's being redesigned, so that's not going to be an issue.
But for now, you want people to go
to the
slash blog.
If you
want
to find any real content, go to slash, you know, click the blog link. Go to sciencecomedian.com/blog.
Oh, well, see, it's in Greek. There's the problem. It's, I don't speak Greek.
I know. So what I found is I got slash dotted like in January.
Yeah.
And all this traffic hit the front page. Not that much of it made it to the blog. So right now, everything's being redesigned.
You need to put the blog up front.
It's going to be a WordPress site, and when you go to Science Comedian, you're going to be there.
Ray Bradbury for prunes?
This is an old Ray Bradbury commercial. It is so funny.
This is a reason to go.
Can we just watch this
is a reason to go to Brian's blog, is for the Ray Bradbury for prunes ad. Let's just see. This is on YouTube. YouTube is a great resource for
bizarre. You are looking at bizarre. Mr. Ray Bradbury, distinguished science fiction author of Fahrenheit 451 and The Martian Chronicles, who has said, by the year 2001, man will travel about in pneumatic people tubes, his television wall to wall, and most incredible of all, his SunSweet pitted prunes carried in tiny mini packs.
Hold it! What's going on here?
Pardon me?
I never mentioned prunes in any of my stories.
Oh, you didn't?
No, never. I'm sorry to be so candid.
No, they're not candid, but pretty sweet all the same. The prune of tomorrow, available now.
They're still rather badly wrinkled, though.
SunSweet's wrinkle technicians will one day conquer that, too.
This is science comedy.
It is.
Wow. Of course, you know who that...
Any of my stories? What are these people trying to pull?
And he goes candid, and they made it candid.
Candid, but they are.
Because you know that voice of that guy is Stan Freeberg. That's a Stan Freeberg
commercial. Stan Freeberg,
that's why,
history of the world?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And see, he was smart.
I grew up on that.
See, he did smart comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it when the woman comes out the tube, there's a little...
Yeah. That's so funny. I stumbled upon that on YouTube. That's
wonderful.
Kind of stuff I love.
That was
so
hilarious.
Yeah. Wow.
People will travel around in pneumatic people tubes. Wall-to-wall television, which we do have.
He got that one right.
Big screen TVs. Yeah.
That was from his short story, The Velt.
I also watched some little interview bits with him, and he said Fahrenheit 451. He didn't say 451. Yeah, he didn't say 451.
He said 451.
And I've always said
451.
Yeah. And the commercial did too. But I heard him say Fahrenheit 451. Interesting.
I think both are correct.
Maybe there's something to be drawn from that, but we're not going to do that right now.
I think both are okay.
But great book.
Yeah, no kidding.
Great book. Stan
great
Freeberg.
Blog.
Great for science, sound effects.
Yeah. Sciencecomedian.com.
/blog for now. By January or February,
you'll fix it up.
New site.
And you know, I got the name of the blog. I just got it. Zero Gravity.
Right, it's a zero.
Great
yeah.
name, I love that.
Again with the puns.
And with the puns.
I'm sitting here saying that you can't do too many puns and everything we do is...
It's all
everything.
Puns.
Now, where will I find your friend feed? So will I be able to go in and see all this stuff?
The Twit conversations.
The chat does not get preserved. It's just what happens.
What is that about? They might be giants. Why does the sun shine?
Why does the sun shine? Originally on a children's album from the 50s called Space Songs by Tom Glaser, who writes space songs.
Right. They might be giants.
Love them.
That... are yes. the, one of the next timepieces. I interviewed They Might Be Giants.
Oh,
and I love them. And they have a science album out now called Here
Just
Comes Science.
I have it.
It's awesome.
It's great.
It's not a kid's album.
It's not a kid's album.
It might be my favorite They Might Be Giants album. It's so good. And they did a new version of Why Does the Sun Shine?
Yes.
And they also, because they had a science consultant... that the sun is a mass of incandescent gas.
Yep.
That's not really what we think anymore. It's actually plasma.
Did they have to rewrite it?
So they rewrote, they re-recorded that song in another cool version of it. And then they followed it with a song called Why Does the Sun Really Shine? And it's because the sun is a miasma of incandescent plasma. And it's very,
that's
it's
awesome.
Very funny.
Perfect.
And there's one other song that's from that old science album. It's called... A shooting star is not a star. Or what is a what is a shooting star or something? But it's really beautiful. It's around and but oh my god, the album rocks. I am a paleontologist.
Yes.
And this song called Speed and Velocity totally rocks.
I love
it. And it's about the difference between speed and velocity.
I agree.
And how many planets?
It's kind of too bad that they bill this as a kid's album. I'm gonna have to download it. Yeah, I love They Might Be.
The thing that they wanted to do is most kids' music is it might
childish.
Be kind of cheesy, and they wanted to do bring their regular music
intelligence,
and they do. It's their regular style of music, and the lyrics are great too. I mean, in a way, you go, it's kids' music because it's. It's explaining like this song called Cells. The Bloodmobile, which is about the circulatory system.
Bloodmobile.
Yeah, but you know what? I love it. I think it's my
favorite.
Well,
if there's a theme to this show, it is intelligence, isn't it?
And, yeah, they are intelligent.
I think they're very intelligent. Let's play a little bit. I'm going to play a little bit.
What do you got there?
Why not? Let's do it.
Yeah, this is the new version.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace where hydrogen is built.
Says incandescent gas, but they
did a new version of this.
Yeah,
because it's an awesome.
Why does the sun really shine?
This is the new version of it, but there's a new song. The next song, the next track is called "Why Does the Sun Really Shine?" And it's an answer. And then you know what? It's really funny. He says like, "Don't listen to that other song."
He
refers back to this song and that it was wrong. It's not true.
I love what
I said before.
they're gonna have to. They're gonna have to do something about Pluto too. I'm sure they have a song.
Have a song called "How Many Planets?"
Yes,
and basically, it just goes through and names the planets, and then it gets to the asteroid belt, and it names a couple large asteroids,
right.
And then it gets to Uranus, Neptune, and then he goes, don't forget about Pluto, Eris, and a bunch of other stuff. So basically,
adding
the
in
song
the
song doesn't
fact.
Explain anything. It just is a list of the planets and other bodies in the solar system in order. And there, that's all it is. And a bunch of other stuff. And a bunch of other stuff.
That we might name sometime.
Let me play a little bit. This is Why Does the Sun Really Shine? Really shine. This is actually from a live performance.
Supernova collapse. Or. The sun is a miasma of incandescent plasma. I forget what I was told by myself. And
I forgot what I was told by myself.
Aren't they
because
great?
Because plasma, electrons are free.
Yeah.
A fourth state of matter.
I'm downloading it.
Well, and also, it comes with a CD and a DVD.
And
the DVD, there's a video for every song, and they're made by different artists.
And they're so great.
They are.
The whole album, the whole concept, I think, is just done so well. And I've been a fan of science music for years.
What other music? Besides
Tom Laird
doing the
elements.
Every year for This Week in Science, I produce a album of science music from local and widespread artists, and so it's been something that has been something I've paid attention to for a while. And then this year, They Might Be Giants came out with this album, and I was just blown away. It was so great.
That's awesome.
It made me very happy.
Yeah, it's a really fun album.
Very fun album, and. Again, I'd like to thank you very much for coming
for
out here,
me.
Joining us
fun.
In studio. This has been the Dr. Kiki Science Hour, and Brian Mallow has been here in studio, thescienscomedian.com.
I think I actually bought thescienscomedian.com as well.
It's good to have. Just in case.
Sciencecomedian.com/blog to visit his blog at Science Comedian on Twitter. You can reach him at sciencecomedian.
Oh, yeah, I'd love it. You know, also at Science Comedian, drop me an email, especially if you're in the Bay Area, but I travel, so send me an email address.
Great.
I have a CD for sale, too.
Oh,
Rational Comedy for an Irrational Planet. Great stocking stuffer.
Oh, it would
great
be. And is that all
stuffer.
On the Science Comedian website?
Yeah, if you go to the blog.
Go to the blog.
Please ignore the front, and you won't even have to deal with it if you wait a month or two.
but then it'll be after
on the right hand side, the pages.
There it is. Science Comedy CD, upcoming shows. It's all here.
And
the Earth's premier self acclaimed science comedian.
Right. Available for off world appearances if transportation is provided.
Wouldn't that be great? It doesn't even have to be first class.
Round trip, though.
I've decided
I should add that.
You want to come back?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Depends where you go. Depends where you go, right?
Right.
Thank you, Brian. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to get serious. Next week on Dr. Kiki Science Hour, we are going to be talking about the neurodegenerative disorder known as multiple sclerosis. We have an expert coming in to talk about current research, current treatments, what's known, what's unknown. We're gonna have a deep conversation, and I'm hoping that you will join me next week and interact through Vidly. So if you have a personal experience with science or treatments related to multiple sclerosis, I'd like you to make a video at Vidly. You go to vid.ly and record a video. If you've got a little webcam in your computer, it's really easy. You can record it right there. And then tweet it to me at Dr. Kiki. Tweet your video to me and then use the hashtag #DKSH.
It's easy.
It's very easy. See, Leo's doing it right now.
But make yours more interesting than mine.
Yeah, tell us about your experiences. We want to interact with you. We want to hear about what you think. If you have any questions about multiple sclerosis, also known as MS,
I have a lot of questions. I have a lot. I want to know more about this. This is a good subject.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, a very great interview.
I have a couple of friends with MS. And my mom. Yeah.
My mom.
So it's close to home for you.
It's very close to home for me. Again, tweet it using Vidly, vid.ly. Record your video. Tweet it to me. I'm at DRKIKI. And the hashtag #DKSH. This is going to be next week. Episode number 27 is next week. Dr. Kiki Science Hour. So you can find me at drkiki.tv. You can find me on Twitter. You can also find more sciencey goodness on This Week in Science, my podcast, which can be found at twist.org. I'll see you next week, and thanks for tuning in to my Science Hour.
Thank you, everybody. See you next time.
Thanks, Leo.
Bye.
Thanks, Kiki. Brian.